Cheney versus the United States of America.
May it please the court. Two issues are presented for your review. I will address the remand issue first. There are five ways to foreclose an ineffectiveness claim: waiver by direct appeal, law of the case, second or successive petition, amendment not permitted to relate back, or if the claim was not raised in the district court. None of these areas apply to this case. The district court decided that Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 15 did not apply to the remand. Instead, the district court focused on the mandate rule in direct appeal cases and decided that Cheney cannot use the accident of remand as an opportunity to reopen waived issues. Unlike the cases cited by the district court, however, this is a collateral proceeding. This is a new lawsuit involving a claim of ineffective assistance of counsel that is not res judicata. Remand is not the end of the case. Final judgment is. That is when a supplemental filing becomes a second or successive petition. The Johnson case is clear on that. Until then, any new ground for relief that relates back to an existing claim is by necessity an amendment, and it should be allowed freely. That is the line drawn by Johnson, Elzey, and Rodriguez. A supplemental filing before final judgment is an amendment, and that's exactly the case here. We just want to look at these areas. There's no dispute that Cheney did not waive this claim by his direct appeal. See knockoff number one. He certainly waived it in the district court. The new grounds were raised 14 months before any evidentiary hearing. There were seven briefs on the supplemental issues. The court focused on law of the case, or as it referred to it as the mandate rule. But neither the district court nor the Court of Appeals decided any of the new issues. So it was not law of the case. The court focused on direct appeal cases where the claim was res judicata. The case was over. The remand in those cases was strictly limited to resentencing issues. That's not the case here. It's not a second or successive petition because the district court would have been obligated to immediately dismiss it under 2244B. There's no contention that it's a second or successive petition. Johnson tells us if it's not a second or successive petition, a supplemental brief is by necessity an amendment. And so long as there is a claim to relate back to, that should be permitted freely. And what the district court did here is really de facto allow an amendment. You've got 14 months and seven briefs on the issues, Your Honor. In fact, the second issue that we're going to talk about today, the double counting issue, was not raised until 2 months before the evidentiary hearing. And the district court allowed that, so it could not have thought that the mandate rule was that strict. I think the court's actions speak louder than its words in that respect. So, you know, really just in summation, because I know I have two issues here. So, in summation, as this chart shows, Cheney has not waived his ineffectiveness claim. We know we are not dealing with issue preclusion because the new issues had not been raised or decided by the district court or this court. Therefore, anything short of res judicata or a second or successive petition is an amendment by necessity, and it should be allowed freely. That is the line drawn by the Seventh Circuit precedent, and that's what Furman, the Supreme Court case, tells us, that unless the district court has a good reason not to allow amendment, and there are five reasons: undue delay, bad faith, dilatory motive, undue prejudice, or futility.
You might want to spend a little time talking about where the ineffective assistance is here. Even if the judge should have expanded this proceeding, right, and considered these grounds, I'm having a hard time identifying real ineffective assistance here.
Well, Your Honor, I think the main one is the failure of the appellate counsel to appeal the tainted eyewitness identification evidence. I mean, there are a number of issues, but that certainly is one that I think would merit some consideration. And certainly the district court did not say it would be futile to amend. And Froman tells us that outright refusal to grant the leave would be abuse of discretion without any basis for doing it, and the district court made no record of a basis for that. So unless there are any other questions...
What's the tainted eyewitness testimony?
The eyewitness testimony has to do, as we discussed in the brief, has to do with the only eyewitness who identified Cheney, and that was after only three black and white photos are shown, after the identification card from the SUV is shown to her and suggested that it's the same guy. And, you know, I think the record is well developed on that point. And appellate counsel did not raise that issue. You know.
I mean, you've got a lot of other issues here about
right.
And aider and abettor and things
right.
like that. I don't
but you know, that,
see that's ineffective assistance anything.
Well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. We don't have a record from the district court. The district court held a hearing, and Duarte tells us that if you're going to hold the hearing on one issue, you should hold them on all the issues. Because the Sixth Amendment claim goes to the entire representation. It's not just one aspect.
But one claim here is that he was improperly charged as an aider and abettor, and you don't need a hearing to resolve something like that.
Well, you know, like I said, the main issue is the failure to appeal the tainted eyewitness identification. That was the linchpin of the government's case. Without the identification, I would submit that the government had no case. So clearly that was an important issue. You had trial and appellate counsel there at the hearing to testify about that. The district judge didn't take any testimony on it. You know, that, under Froman, under Duarte, you just can't do that. And I see my time is short. If I can move to the second issue, the double counting issue. Your Honor, what this chart shows is that the government has been allowed to do by indirection what the sentencing guidelines directly prohibit. This circuit has long held that double counting occurs when identical conduct is described in two different ways so that two different adjustments apply. More practical, the sentencing guidelines incorporate this prohibition against double counting. In the clearest possible terms, the guidelines specifically prohibit the 3A1.2 official victim factor from being double counted. And the comment to 3A1.2 is what I'm going to focus on. And to be clear, the government could not have enhanced Cheney's sentence with 3A1.2 and the federal sentencing enhancement for resisting arrest, which is 2A2.4. The comment is very clear on this. 3A1.2 says, do not apply this adjustment if the offense guideline specifically incorporates this factor. Then it references 2A2.4, and it says that guideline specifically incorporates official victim. Then if you go over to 2A2.4, it says the same thing. The base offense level reflects the fact that the victim was a governmental officer performing official duties. Therefore, do not apply 3A1.2. However, what the government did here by using the hook of 2K2.1, another felony offense under state law, is they were able to double count the official victim factor with the functional equivalent of 2A2.4, resisting arrest under the Indiana Code. It's the functional equivalent. The Indiana Code and the case law in Indiana tell us that this offense involves official victim because it harms the peace and dignity of the state of Indiana and its law enforcement authority. And it is an offense against public administration.
How do we deal with the fact, though, that the resulting two-level increase in his total offense level doesn't affect his overall sentence?
Well, that's not on this issue, Your Honor.
That's not this issue.
No, this issue certainly affects the increase. It's three levels under official victim, and it's five levels under the 2K2.1. But that's what the Jackson court missed What the Jackson Court notes that the district court relied upon is it didn't look at the conduct of 3A1.2 and it didn't compare that to 2A2.4. When you compare the two, there's no question that official victim is taken into account in resisting arrest. The code tells us that. And the government should not be allowed to use the Indiana state code to do the functional equivalent. The guidelines are specific and they're clear on that, and the case law tells us that if the guidelines are clear on that point, the court should heed it, and the court did not heed it here because it did not do the analysis. Thank you.
You got about half a minute left, is all.
Okay.
All right, counsel.
May it please the court, my name is Gerald Coraz. I'm an assistant United States attorney. I'm representing the United States in this case. This case has a very unusual procedural history, but understanding that procedural history is the key to resolving this case as it ought to be correctly resolved. After Cheney was convicted and his conviction was affirmed, he filed a 2255 motion. In that motion, he raised three grounds for relief. There was never any contention that he couldn't amend and add a fourth ground or a fifth ground, but he put in the ground that he wanted. The district court resolved all three grounds against him. He appealed. The district court denied a certificate of appealability. This court also denied a certificate of appealability, and by doing so, said, in effect, we see no constitutional error in the resolution of any of these issues, which at the time that the Court of Appeals acted was correct under the existing law. However, Glover intervened, and Glover set aside Drive, which was the basis of the district court's resolution of one of the three issues. With the change in law in Glover, clearly one issue, the two-level enhancement, had to be reexamined by the district court. And this court sent the case right back to the district court so that the district court could resolve it in light of Glover, and the district court did so. The district court found on remand, well, let me back up. When the case went back on remand, Mr. Cheney attempted multiple times to amend his 2255 to add new issues. The United States consistently opposed those efforts. The court allowed him to file his amendments, but never said that we accept them, we're going to consider them. It looked at them as it should have, because it was possible that there was something that should appropriately be considered. For example, Mr. Cheney made a claim of newly discovered evidence. Well, newly discovered evidence which would demonstrate actual innocence might be appropriately considered by the district court. No such evidence of that nature was ever produced. Instead, new issues, issues that were in existence at the time of the original 2255, were presented to the district court. Different aspects of ineffective assistance of counsel with respect to guideline calculations, an identification issue not related to anything initially raised in the initial 2255, all were attempted to be added. The district court decided it should hold an evidentiary hearing, but further decided that it should limit that hearing to the remanded issue, that is, the two-level enhancement, and it issued an order to that effect. At the hearing, the district court determined that Cheney's counsel was ineffective for not asserting the two-level increase, but the two-level increase would not affect the sentence imposed And that was because, if you go back, Cheney was convicted on 5 counts, and it resulted in 3 groupings for guideline calculations. And taking down his total offense level from, I believe, 30 to 28 on the armed robbery did not affect the 30 level on the felon in possession count. Therefore, there's no change in the guideline range, and therefore no prejudicial effect on the sentence. And so the case was resolved on that basis. Now, in so resolving the case, the district court did look at the double counting issue, because the district court felt that the double counting issue was closely enough related to the issue remanded that it could consider it. And the United States has expressed respectfully its disagreement with the court on that element, although it's a harmless element because it was resolved in the government's favor. In any case, the district court was correct. It followed the mandate of this court. It considered the only matter that was left open, and therefore it ought to be affirmed. I notice, Your Honors, that my white light is on, so that I will conclude unless this court has some questions for me.
Now, of course, I mean, didn't the district court have the discretion to allow an amendment?
No, Your Honor, I don't think so in this circumstance.
What limits would there be on the district court authority to allow an amendment after our remand?
I think that it would have to be an issue that had been raised appropriately in the district court in the original 2255, not decided by the district court, perhaps because it resolved the case on a different ground, not decided then by this court, and remaining out there. Such an issue would be appropriate. An amendment for newly discovered evidence indicating actual innocence, I think, would be appropriate. Those are the only two that come to mind. I won't represent that there couldn't be another, but it would have to be something in those very limited natures where you're allowed to go outside the remand. Another intervening change in law might appropriately allow something to be brought that could not be brought. But it would be very limited, and nothing of that nature is at issue in this case.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
How much time is it? What? 30 seconds.
I'd like to answer your question, Judge Roedner, if I may. The Johnson case is clear. LZ is clear. Rodriguez is clear. The end of the road is a final decision on the merits. That's when a claim becomes a second or successive petition. Anything short of that, any supplemental grounds that a claim can run back to, that's an amendment. The case law is clear on that. The limitations are as follows. Number one, issue preclusion. If the district court or the appellate court had considered the issue, the prisoner can't raise it again. That's where the mandate rule falls, but none of the supplemental issues are caught in that mandate rule. They weren't raised. The other area is, like I said, under the AEDPA, is what the second or successive petition. Those are the two things, issue preclusion or second or successive petition. However, the district court, if you look at footnote 5 of the district court's opinion, district court said that Rule 15 does not apply to this case. And the law it does, because Johnson tells us that a prisoner receives one complete round of litigation, which, as in other civil suits, includes the opportunity to amend a pleading before judgment. There's no final judgment here. The remand is not the end of the case. The jury should have been allowed to amend. It should be granted freely.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, counsel.